This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
The Norris Group proudly presents our 16th annual award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate. Industry experts join Bruce Norris to discuss evolving industry trends, real estate bubbles, inflation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. We want to thank our platinum partners, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, San Diego Creative Investors Association, White Feather Investments, Wilson Investment Properties, UDirect IRA Services, MVT Productions, and Realty 411 Magazine.
So here we are, you know, we're hovering around this very high number, 850. And the affordability number, this is the chart that I look at. One of the comps we have over the years, we created comps to tell us that a cycle is over. This is one of the charts that tells us a boom cycle is over. The affordability hitting 17%, 80, 89, 05. Then it went down to 12 in 07 or 06. That was fake. You know, we had people lying on loans, and now we're down to that 17 or 16. It basically saying you're done. This upcycle is over, but we have some things in place that we've never had before, and we'll talk about that. Here's a percentage of median income. This is the other comp, if you will. What does it take out of your budget to buy the median price home with 20% down? And we're at 70%. Now, there's a history of that. Did we have it in the crazy times, 2006 and 7? Yes. And we had something similar in 1980 and 89. A very exaggerated. Here's a good question, though. Do you stay there? Is there any history of staying there, spending 70% of your budget on house? No. See, that's the scary part. So, you know, we're getting comfortable saying, well, yeah, we'll just stay there for now. Well, when does that happen last? That would be good to ask. Okay? So if it stays there, there's got to be something unusual for it to keep there. Because look at the history of it. You spend a lot of time under 40%. So if you want to know what the price damage is, just take a look at 70% and put it into 40. Is that a huge price hit? It is. That's what should happen mathematically. So in a little while, we'll talk about why that's probably not going to occur. Here's a history of mortgage rates. It's a really interesting thing. You know, again, when you study charts and your agenda is to find out the truth, you come up with some amazing things. Interest rates went from 1974 to 1980. Interest rates doubled from 7.5 to 15. How would you like to have been in that stage? You know what happened to price? They tripled. Think about that. The median price in California went from 34 grand to 105, and interest rates went from 7.5 to 15. So when anybody says, well, of course, when interest rates, and I've debated a lot of PhDs that this sentence has come out of their mouth. Of course, when interest rates go up, prices go down. Really? You just had to look at two charts to come up with a better answer than that. And so, and then 2008 and 9, we have an interest rate that's a little less than that, right, about 6, and prices went down by 50%. So here's a good question for you. If you absolutely know the direction of interest rate, what can you absolutely tell me about the direction of price? Nothing. Isn't that fun? Well, that's good to know, because then you can go, okay, well, what else matters? Because it's more than that. So one of the things about interest rates is that we've had a sequence that happens after affordability, and it didn't matter what the interest rates were. It happened just the same. So whatever where the interest rates were 13 or 10 or 6 or 5, what happens after you hit this affordability number to other charts is damaging. So what happens first is you explode in unsold inventory. So inventory goes up. Now, if you're not in 1980 and 81, how's that for a chart of a lot of inventory? You know, we feel bad. What, we got 2.5 months? Oh, my gosh. They had 22 months of houses, 30 months of condos, 10% unemployment, 15% mortgage rates. Price hit? zero. See, it's fun when you study charts and go, okay, well, I have to contend with that because that was, in fact, what happened. So why didn't you have price damage? And that's what's neat about looking at this and say, okay, I could have all those bad charts. It must be missing a bad chart that means more than what's there. So that's maybe what tonight's a little bit about. So within 2 years of reaching this low point in affordability, this is what happened to inventory in the different cycles. 4 months to 22 months, 6 to 13, 2.5 to 9. You have a big price hit, 2.5 to 9, and no price hit in 4 to 22. So, maybe the makeup of the inventory is more important than the months. This is a sales. So you hit 17% affordability, and the sales go down. What's going to be interesting, you know, at the end of 2023, the amount of commissions made compared to 2021 will be about 50%. So the realtors will, you could say the realtors are still fully employed, or you could say that they have 50% unemployment. That's actually a correct number. So this industry is not doing well. So sales went down. New construction goes down. After you hit that 17% affordability, it goes down. If it take a look at the numbers, that's 2005 to 2007. How could you build a house when you could buy a two-year-old house for 20 cents on the dollar? So you couldn't build. That's part of the cycle. Now, this cycle, this is California numbers. We decided not to build new houses in California. Apparently, we don't need them anymore. Usually at the peak, we have 150,000 houses built, and this time we peaked at about 60. And usually there's a ramp up, you know, you do 90 and 100 and 120. We never did any of that. So apparently we don't need new houses, or we'll talk about some of the policies that are in place that make it very difficult for a builder to do that. Unemployment, again, affordability hitting 17% tips all of these charts into a negative territory. There's the unemployment. So from 6.9 to 10, 5.1 to 9.5, 5.4 to 12.5, and this cycle, 3.6 to... So what's interesting about this cycle, it's not cooperating with history. So you have to go, okay, well, why is that? Trustee sales, how's that for a nice chart? Percentage-wise, it's dangerous everywhere. It's like 888% on the first cycle. It's 888%, I think, on the second cycle, and then it's thousands of percent in the third cycle. So, and this cycle, it's not up, it's down. So there's something weird about this cycle. So anyway, the affordability recovers. And so this is what's interesting is as affordability goes back up, every other chart in real estate gets hammered. Of higher affordability does not help other charts. You're saying I have 5 minutes? Okay. All right. So this is the median price history after 17% affordability. So different reactions. In the 80s, it goes up. In the 90s, it goes down a little. In 2007, 8, 9, it crashes. And now we have to make a new decision. What's next for now? Well, there was the trustee sales in going up in percentage. But here's what they were as a percentage of the transactions. And all of a sudden, it starts to mean something. So this is in 1980. We have all those other charts that are terrible. But the transactions, the number of trustee sales, if you look at the right, was 1 in 4. If you're an appraiser, you don't have to say that that's the dominant number. That's the value of everything. It's only 1 in 4 sales. Matter of fact, you can probably ignore that. If you go to the 90s, it's about 40%. And you started to have some price damages. We went to auctions and we bought those. Those became comps that started to hurt the retail market. But what happened in 2008, it was 7 in 10. It was the market. If you were flipping houses in that year, you could buy a house that was $365,000 3 years ago, buy it for $65,000, fix it, and have 25 offers in one day for $125,000, and the appraisal come back at $90,000. And why was that? Is because all of the inventory was REO selling for below 100, and the appraiser couldn't ignore it. That's when you have damage, is when you have a category of real estate that dictates the comp of every other property. So when you go forward, you have to go, okay, are we going to have a pile of trustee sales? Or maybe that's not the only question you have to ask. Have you ever seen another chart damage inventory? So Grand Junction, Colorado in 1984, prices there, I bought all of the fourplexes HUD took back in one buy. They were 200 grand. I bought them for 40. Okay. What happened there? Oil shale left. Unemployment went through the roof. That's what caused the foreclosure. So there was a domino that tipped over the unemployment. So that's the chart we have to look at this cycle. Is unemployment going to tip over? Is it going to tip over other charts? Okay. All right. 5 minutes, Joey. Okay. All right. So let's get to why that's probably not going to occur. These lines are in billions of dollars. So if you look to the left, in the cycle where interest rates were really cheap, we borrowed over $1 trillion for lots of quarters in a row. My guess, wasn't just one loan per person. What if you had a chance to get 4.5% for the first time? Holy cow. And then next year it was 3.5. And the next year it was 2.5. You probably refied 3 times. As a matter of fact, when you did that, I probably think there was a conversation that said, we've always wanted an office or a pool, and we can have one now that doesn't even raise the payment. Let's do that. So it's interesting that maybe if you made those decisions, you're not going anywhere this time, that you're staying there. This is the amount of excess savings, which was all the way up, to almost $2.5 trillion. Now it's about $700 billion. But what was normal? Look at 2020, quarter one, not much. So we still have more savings now. Huge amount of net worth. Adjustable loans, man, they were a very small participant for the last decade. Huge amounts of equity. Low LTV for the equity position. We were pretty disciplined in this cycle. We didn't cash out a lot of equity. We refied, but we refied to lower interest rates and probably didn't pull out of a lot of money. I think the lender learned a lesson. Well, maybe we shouldn't foreclose on everybody. That would be a bad idea because it dictated the value of every other piece of real estate in existence when they did that. So I think they've learned their lesson. And it's interesting, if you go on YouTube, can you find the story that says, oh my, foreclosures are exploding? Well, we have some data people today that talk about that. See, exploding is interesting. It depends if you have an agenda. Can I get an audience, please? So if you have 10 foreclosures that go to 30, is that insignificant or is that a 300% increase? It's insignificant because, again, it has to be a percentage of the sales to be damaging to the real estate market. What's interesting is this is the existing home for sale. It's way down. It's 1 million units. And at normal times, it's 2.5. Well, why is nothing for sale? So I'm a pretty practical person, so I think about that. Okay, if I had a 2.5% mortgage, what's the most valuable asset I have? It's the mortgage. I'm not going anywhere. What if I get transferred? Is that house going up for sale, or am I renting it for a grand cash flow, and I'll come back and live there again someday? See, that's more likely to happen. That's a very rational decision. What's coming up in a decision, let's say, and again, smarter people will be on the panel to think about what's next for interest rates, but just as a practical thing, let's say we get mortgage rates to 5.5. Does that induce the seller off his inactivity because he has a 3.5% mortgage? Does that induce him to sell, or does it induce the buyer to come off the sideline who's trying to say no to 8 and now he has a chance at 5.5? See, my guess would be you have a lot more buyers show up than sellers that have to sell. So it's a really weird market because there's no history of staying at the levels that we're at. Job openings are still there. Household growth is still there. This is what's interesting. So what has occurred is that normally new home sales represent 15% of all sales, and existing inventory is 85%. And now builders are at 33%. They're not selling more homes, by the way. They're selling as many homes as they used to, because the whole market is down by half, remember? But the builder is like got a shocked look on their face going, huh, we're okay. Matter of fact, we're actually a more desired inventory because there's nothing else for sale in the existing world. So that's the thing that's occurring right now. So the lock-in effect is actually really in place. I think this chart says that something like 60 or 83% of mortgages are under 4%. We also started having, before the mortgages got really cheap, we already kept our homes for a lot longer than we used to. When I bought a home in 74, the average hold time was 4 years. Now it's 13, and now you gave people a 2.5%, 3% mortgage rate. I have a feeling they're not going anywhere, which means you have a lot less homes for sale. This is a guy that has a report that I really like. LA Housing Ports does all the counties in California. This is the missing listings. You just don't have the listings. People are not going to sell, okay? So this moodometer reading, let me just go forward to see. Okay, I'll go back there. I'm not going to scare you until the last one. I want you to look at this because this is the history going back all the way to 1980. How much time have you spent at 70% of your income being necessary to buy a house? It's euphoria. So I want you to think of the mindset that gets you there. Euphoria is 2021 when you have a house for sale and you know that within hours you'll have 12 overbids for all cash. And you're just like, I'm so good at this. That's what happens. That's how you get to 70%. Now we're at 70% and that emotion is not there. So if you're selling stuff now, what happens by noon? Nothing. You're going, see, I'm a seller. So I feel these emotions, you know, you're going, okay, I'm not going to look. You know, you don't want to get motivated. But there is now that balance where the stuff for sale doesn't have that immediate multiple buyer. It has a buyer. We just sold something yesterday at a price that's exactly what it was 2 years ago, but there wasn't 10 people wanted at the same time. So it's stable, but I want you to realize it's never done what it's doing, ever. And if you went back to a normal percentage of what we're making and what it costs to buy a house, that's the next chart. Okay, the moodometer, instead of saying 70, many years, usually 9 years in a row in each of the other cycles, the last two cycles, would be a 40% mood, taking you're going to spend 40% of your income. Well, right now we're at about 860 median price. That would take that down with an 8% interest to 470. So you don't get too cocky, okay? So what's actually likely to occur is you are not going to have any price increases for a very long time. But you probably aren't going to have a price crash either. And it'll be really interesting to see if you have interest rates go back down. I can't wait to talk to, you know, some of the people that have bigger brains than I do talking about the interest rates because, again, you can get online and see all kinds of people going, oh, yeah, it's going to be down to 4% in no time, and then other people are at, it's going to be 12. So I'd like to know where it's going to be. But the higher the rate, the less inventory is going to show up. And you have buyers. You know what percentage of buyers right now in Cape Coral there are? 60% of all transactions are cash. That's a big advantage. You know, that's one of the reasons I'm in Florida. You know why? Because guess who migrates there? They migrate there from New York and New Jersey and Canada, where markets are twice as expensive. So they sell something with $1 million loan on a $2 million house and buy a house that's free and clear. Here in Florida for $1 million, that's way nicer than what they sold. That's why I'm there. So anyway. All right, Joey, I know I took longer than five. Sorry about that.
If he wasn't retired, I'd fire him right now.
See isurvivedrealestate.com for event details, information on all our generous sponsors, and to connect with our speakers. We'd also like to thank our gold sponsors, Chase Leland Photography, Fair Trade Real Estate, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Keystone CPA, Lavis Tax Wealth Management, NorCal REA, NSDREI, Pasadena Phoebe, Property Radar, The Outspoken Investor, Tony Alvarez, White House Catering, Windermere Tower Realty, Rick and Leanne Rossiter. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event details.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.